Chapter 1. Ararat, P. Eridani A System, 2675. Scorpio kept an eye on Vasco as the young man swam to shore. All the way in he had thought about drowning, what it would feel like to slide down through unlit fathoms. They said that if you had to die, if you had no choice in the matter, then drowning was not the worst way to go. He wondered how anyone could be sure of this, and whether it applied to pigs. He was still thinking about it when the boat came to a sliding halt, the electric outboard racing until he killed it. Scorpio poked a stick overboard, judging the water to be no more than half a meter deep. He had hoped to locate one of the channels that allowed a closer approach to the island, but this would have to do. Even if he had not agreed to a place of rendezvous with Vasco, there was no time to push back out to sea and curl around, hunting for something he had enough trouble finding when the sea was clear and the sky completely empty of clouds. Scorpio moved to the bow and took hold of the plastic-sheathed rope Vasco had been using as a pillow. He wrapped one end tightly around his wrist, and then vaulted over the side of the boat in a single, fluid movement. He splashed into the shallows, the bottle-green water lapping just above his knees. He could barely feel the cold through the thick leather of his boots and leggings. The boat was drifting slowly now that he had disembarked, but with a flick of his wrist he took up the slack in the line and brought the bow around by several degrees. He started walking, leaning hard to haul the boat. The rocks beneath his feet were treacherous, but for once his bow-legged gait served him well. He did not break his rhythm until the water was only halfway up his boots, and he again felt the boat scrape bottom. He hauled it a dozen strides further ashore, but that was as far as he was prepared to risk dragging it. He saw that Vasco had reached the shallows. The young man abandoned swimming and stood up in the water. Scorpio got back into the boat, flakes and scabs of corroded metal breaking away in his grip as he tugged the hull closer by the gunwale. The boat was past its 120th hour of immersion, this likely to be its final voyage. He reached over the side and dropped the small anchor. He could have done so earlier, but anchors were just as prone to erosion as hulls. It paid not to place too much trust in them. Another glance at Vasco. He was picking his way carefully towards the boat, his arms outstretched for balance. Scorpio gathered his companion's clothes and stuffed them into his pack, which already contained rations, fresh water, and medical supplies. He heaved the pack onto his back and began the short trudge to dry land, taking care to check on Vasco occasionally. Scorpio knew he had been hard on Vasco, but once the anger had started rising in him, there had been no holding it in check. He found this development disturbing. It was 23 years since Scorpio had raised his hand in anger against a human, except in the pursuit of duty. But he recognized that there was also a violence in words. Once he would have laughed it off, but lately he had been trying to live a different kind of life. He thought he had put certain things behind him. It was, of course, the prospect of meeting Clavaine that had brought all that fury to the surface. Too much apprehension, too many emotional threads reaching back into the blood-drenched mire of the past. Clavaine knew what Scorpio had been. Clavaine knew exactly what he was capable of doing. He stopped and waited for the young man to catch up with him.
"Sir?"
Vasco was out of breath and shivering.
"How was it?"
"You were right, sir. It was a bit colder than it looked."
Scorpio shrugged the pack from his back.
"I thought it would be, but you did all right. I've got your things with me. You'll be dry and warm in no time. Not sorry you came."
"No, sir. Wanted a bit of adventure, didn't I?"
Scorpio passed him his things.
"You'll be after a bit less of it when you're my age."
It was a still day, as was often the case when the cloud cover on Ararat was low. The nearer sun, the one that Ararat orbited, was a washed-out smudge hanging low in the western sky. Its distant binary counterpart was a hard white jewel above the opposite horizon, pinned between a crack in the clouds. P. Eridani A and B, except no one ever called them anything other than bright sun and faint sun. In the silver-gray daylight, the water was leached of its usual color, reduced to a drab gray-green soup. It looked thick when it sloshed around Scorpio's boots, but despite the opacity of the water, the actual density of suspended microorganisms was low by Ararat standards. Vasco had still taken a small risk by swimming, but he had been right to do so, for it had allowed them to sail the boat much closer to the shore. Scorpio was no expert on the matter, but he knew that most meaningful encounters between humans and jugglers took place in areas of the ocean that were so saturated with organisms that they were more like floating rafts of organic matter. The concentration here was low enough that there was little risk of the jugglers eating the boat while they were away, or creating a local tide system to wash it out to sea. They covered the remaining ground to dry land, reaching the gently sloping plain of rock that had been visible from sea as a line of darkness. Here and there shallow pools interrupted the ground, mirroring the overcast sky in silver grey. They made their way between them, heading for a pimple of white in the middle distance.
"You still haven't told me what all this is about," Vasco said.
"You'll find out soon enough. Aren't you sufficiently excited about meeting the old man?"
"Scared, more likely."
"He does that to people, but don't let it get to you. He doesn't get off on reverence."
After 10 minutes of further walking, Scorpio had recovered the strength he had expended hauling in the boat. In that time, the pimple had become a dome perched on the ground, and finally revealed itself to be an inflatable tent. It was guyed to cleats pinned into the rock, the white fabric around its base stained various shades of briny green. It had been patched and repaired several times. Gathered around the tent, leaning against it at odd angles, were pieces of conch material recovered from the sea like driftwood. The way they had been poised was unmistakably artful.
"What you said earlier, sir," Vasco said, "about Clavain not going around the world after all."
"Yes."
"If he came here instead, why couldn't they just tell us that?"
"Because of why he came here," Scorpio replied.
They made their way around the inflatable structure until they reached the pressure door. Next to it was the small humming box that supplied power to the tent, maintaining the pressure differential and providing heat and other amenities for its occupant. Scorpio examined one of the conch pieces, fingering the sharp edge where it had been cut from some larger hole.
"Looks like he's been doing some beach combing."
Vasco pointed to the already open outer door.
"All the same, doesn't look as if there's anyone home at the moment."
Scorpio opened the inner door. Inside he found a bunk bed and a neatly folded pile of bedclothes, a small collapsible desk, a stove and food synthesizer, a flagon of purified water and a box of rations, an air pump that was still running and some small conch pieces on the table.
"There's no telling how long it's been since he was last here," Vasco said.
Scorpio shook his head. "He hasn't been away for very long. Probably not more than an hour or two."
Vasco looked around, searching for whatever piece of evidence Scorpio had already spotted. He wasn't going to find it. Pigs had long ago learned that the acute sense of smell they had inherited from their ancestors was not something shared by baseline humans. They had also learned, painfully, that humans did not care to be reminded of this. They stepped outside again, sealing the inner door as they had found it.
"What now?"
Vasco asked. Scorpio snapped the spare communications bracelet from one wrist and handed it to Vasco. It had already been assigned a secure frequency, so there was no danger of anyone on the other islands listening in.
"You know how to use one of these things."
"I'll manage. Anything in particular you want me to do with it?"
"Yes. You're going to wait here until I get back. I expect to have Clavain with me when I return, but in the event he finds you first, you're to tell him who you are and who sent you. Then you call me and ask Clavain if he'd like to talk to me. Got that?"
"And if you don't come back?"
"You'd better call Blood."
Vasco fingered the bracelet.
"You sound a bit worried about his state of mind, sir. Do you think he might be dangerous?"
"I hope so," Scorpio said, "because if he isn't, he's not a lot of use to us."
He patted the young man on the shoulder.
"Now wait here while I circle the island. It won't take me more than an hour, and my guess is I'll find him somewhere near the sea."
Scorpio made his way across the flat, rocky fringes of the island, spreading his stubby arms for balance, not caring in the slightest how awkward or comical he appeared. He slowed, thinking that in the distance he could see a figure shifting in and out of the darkening haze of late afternoon sea mist. He squinted, trying to compensate for eyes that no longer worked as well as they had in Chasm City when he had been younger. On one level he hoped that the mirage would turn out to be Clavain. On another, he hoped that it would turn out to be a figment of his imagination, some conjunction of rock, light, and shade tricking the eye. As little as he cared to admit it, he was anxious. It was 6 months since he had last seen Clavain. Not that long a time, really, most certainly not when measured against the span of the man's life. Yet Scorpio could not rid himself of the sense that he was about to encounter an acquaintance he had not met in decades, someone who might have been warped beyond all recognition by life and experience. He wondered how he would respond if it turned out that Clavain had indeed lost his mind. Would he even recognize it if that was true? Scorpio had spent enough time around baseline humans to feel confident about reading their intentions, moods, and general states of sanity. It was said that human and pig's minds were not so very different. But with Clavain, Scorpio always made a mental note to ignore his expectations. Clavain was not like other humans. History had shaped him, leaving behind something unique and quite possibly monstrous. Scorpio was 50. He had known Clavain for half his life, ever since he had been captured by Clavain's former faction in the Yellowstone system. Shortly after that, Clavain had defected from the Conjoiners, and after some mutual misgivings, he and Scorpio had ended up fighting together. They had gathered a loose band of soldiers and assorted hangers-on from the vicinity of Yellowstone, and had stolen a ship to make the journey to Resurgam's system. Along the way, they had been hectored and harried by Clavain's former Conjoiner comrades. From Resurgam's space, riding another ship entirely, they had arrived here, on the blue-green waterlogged marble of Ararat. Little fighting had been required since Resurgam, but the two had continued to work together in the establishment of the temporary colony. They had schemed and plotted whole communities into existence. Often they had argued, but only ever over matters of the gravest importance. When one or the other leant towards too harsh or too soft a policy, the other was there to balance matters. It was in those years that Scorpio had found the strength of character to stop hating human beings every waking moment of his life. If nothing else, he owed that to Clavain. But nothing was ever that simple, was it? The problem was that Clavain had been born 500 years ago, and had lived through many of those years. What if the Clavain that Scorpio knew, the Clavain that most of the colonists knew for that matter, was only a passing phase, like a deceitful glimpse of sunshine on an otherwise stormy day? In the early days of their acquaintance, Scorpio had kept at least half an eye on him, alert for any reversion to his indiscriminate butcher tendencies. He had seen nothing to arouse his suspicions, and more than enough to reassure him that Clavain was not the ghoul that history said he was. But in the last 2 years, his certainties had crumbled. It was not that Clavain had become more cruel, argumentative, or violent than before, but something in him had changed. It was as if the quality of light on a landscape had shifted from one moment to another. The fact that Scorpio knew that others harbored similar doubts about his own stability was of scant comfort. He knew his own state of mind and hoped he would never hurt another human the way he had done in the past. But he could only speculate about what was going on inside his friend's head. What he could be certain about was that the Clavain he knew, the Clavain alongside whom he had fought, had withdrawn to some intensely private personal space. Even before he had retreated to this island, Scorpio had reached the point where he could hardly read the man at all. But he did not blame Clavain for that. No one would. He continued his progress until he was certain that the figure was real, and then advanced further until he was able to discern detail. The figure was crouched down by the shore of sea, motionless, as if caught in some reverie that had interrupted an otherwise innocent examination of the tide pools and their fauna. Scorpio recognized him as Clavain. He would have been as certain, even if he had thought the island uninhabited. The pig felt a momentary surge of relief. At least Clavain was still alive. No matter what else transpired today, that much had to count as a victory. When he was within shouting distance of the man, Clavain sensed his presence and looked around. There was a breeze now, one that had not been there when Scorpio landed. It pulled wild white hair across Clavain's pink-red features. His beard, normally neatly trimmed, had also grown long and unkempt since his departure. His thin figure was clad in black, with a dark shawl or cloak pulled across his shoulders. He maintained an awkward posture between kneeling and standing, poised on his haunches like a man who had only stopped there for a moment. Scorpio was certain he had been staring out to sea for hours.
"Neville," Scorpio said.
He said something back, his lips moving, but his words were masked by the hiss of the surf. Scorpio called out again.
"It's me, Scorpio."
Clavain's mouth moved a second time. His voice was a croak that barely made it above a whisper.
"I said, I told you not to come here. I know."
Scorpio had approached closer now. Clavain's white hair flicked in and out of his deeply recessed old man's eyes. They appeared to be focused on something very distant and bleak.
"I know, and for 6 months we honored that request, didn't we?"
"6 months,"
Clavain almost smiled.
"Is that how long it's been?"
6 months and a week, if you want to be finicky about it."
"It doesn't feel like it. It feels like no time at all."
Clavain looked back out to sea again, the back of his head turned towards Scorpio. Between thin strands of white hair, his scalp had the same raw pink color as Scorpio's skin.
"Sometimes it feels a lot longer as well," Clavain continued, "as if all I've ever done was spend each day here. Sometimes I feel as if there isn't another soul on this planet." "We're all still here," Scorpio said. "All 170,000 of us. We still need you."
"I expressly asked not to be disturbed."
"Unless it was important. That was always the arrangement, Neville."
Clavain stood up with painful slowness. He had always been taller than Scorpio, but now his thinness gave him the appearance of something sketched in a hurry. His limbs were quick, cursive scratches against the sky. Scorpio looked at Clavain's hands. They were the fine-boned hands of a surgeon, or perhaps an interrogator. The rasp of his long fingernails against the damp black fabric of his trousers made Scorpio wince.
"Well, we've found something," Scorpio said.
"We don't know exactly what it is, or who sent it, but we think it came from space. We also think there might be someone in it."